Morena tato, welcome back to another Ask the Experts podcast session. Today I'm very, very pleased to welcome Phil Pingram. He is from Haven Financial Advisors and will tell us today a little bit about insurance and personal insurance in particular as a business owner. Welcome Phil, how are you?
Thank you, very well, thank you.
Awesome. So we have, as it works with us, the experts, we have prepared a few questions that are quite relevant for our audience, which are usually small to medium-sized businesses. And a lot of time I get asked questions such as, why do I need personal insurance as a business owner? Because quite often, you know, you have your indemnity insurance and public liability insurance for your business. But a lot of the time, we do not insure the biggest asset, which is yourself, because if you can't work, you don't earn any income. So I guess my first question to you this morning, Phil, is as a business owner, why would I need insurance for myself? And what are the different options in terms of, you know, can I claim it through the business, which I can probably help you answer some of that. Yes. But yeah, over to you.
Yeah, so everybody's situation and case is going to be different. So to give you sort of some examples that might sort of help you relate to your own circumstances. So if you're a sole trader and the business is highly dependent on your activity, your participation in the business to earn any revenue, then fairly obviously, if you're seriously unwell, unable to work for an extended period, then your revenue is going to start drying up. So that impact can impact the business itself in terms of, does the business remain sustainable? Can it still pay its fixed bills, lease, maybe financing on equipment, that sort of stuff? So we can look at protecting that sort of thing, your fixed bills as a business, and that insurance would sit within the business because it's a business expense. And we can look at protecting the income that you normally draw out of the business so that your household, your family doesn't get affected by the lack of income. So that might be in the form of mortgage protection cover, income cover, expenses cover in terms of household expenses. So there's a whole raft of different products we can use to address that inability to work from a sole trader's point of view. If you're perhaps in a partnership, so there's sort of two key people in the business, then the structure and the solutions might be a little bit different. For example, if the business can still run with one of the two people working, you then need to think about, well, is the revenue that one person brings in still going to sustain the income that both of you need to take out of the business to keep your lives running separately? If not, then we can put in something to backfill, fill in the gap. Or it may be a case of you're committed contractually to a particular level of work and would actually need to backfill from a resource point of view. So you'd need to hire somebody in to carry out the work that you would normally be doing. And obviously, then you've got to pay that person as well as paying yourself. So again, that's the sort of thing we can backfill. The key thing I'd say is don't get hung up on what the product names are. That's really what my role is. So my role is to help you assess where your risks are, help you almost analyze where are the key risks, what are we going to prioritize? And then I know the different products, different providers and so on that are available. So I'm then looking to match up which product is a best fit for achieving the coverage goal that you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, stepping back to that partnership sort of scenario, and it could be, you know, two friends, it could be a father and son business, anything that sort of operates as a partnership of two, three, four people. You've got perhaps to consider what happens if something fairly serious happens to one of the partners. Obviously, the most serious thing being death, but maybe permanent incapacity, them having to, through no fault of their own or no decision of their own, withdraw from the business on a permanent basis. So there's a piece to think about there in terms of what happens to the business structure. Do you have a buy-sell agreement in place as co-shareholders of the business? And if so, where does the money come from for the person that's staying in the business to buy out the person that's leaving the business? So
Interesting.
again, that is something we can put insurance in place for in terms of life cover that's held by the business to cover that buy sell requirement, total and permanent disability cover or trauma cover type things to cover serious illnesses and so on. So it's really about identifying where your risks are. And as a partnership point of view, it's quite good to sort of look at both sides of that so that, because obviously you're effectively insuring your other partner in the business. It's about making sure that both of you aren't going to be adversely affected if something happens to one or other of you.
And this is a really important point you're making, simply because, like, for instance, there's a partnership structure where you don't have a limited liability company set up. Usually when one of the partners, in the case of death, for instance, dies, then the partnership is essentially ceasing, it ceased. So, which not only affects the partner that has passed away potentially, but also the partner that's left behind and their family. So, it's quite an important point you're making there.
Quite often people have this sort of life plan that, when they come to wanting to slow down and retire, they'll be able to sell the business as a going concern and all that, and that funds their retirement. Obviously, if something happens between now and reaching retirement, so you haven't sold the business, you need it to still be a going concern, even if you fall ill in between. So being able to keep that business going up, turning over, so that it can be sold as a going concern,
That's right,
is quite important in terms of that future planning. And
Excellent.
it applies in terms of death as well, because obviously, unless you're a single person with no dependents, the rest of your household is also dependent on that plan.
100%, and that's something that I think as business owners we sometimes overlook, particularly if your life partner has a job. You think there's always money coming in, but we are building a life based on the standard of two incomes most of the time, or a certain level of income. And if one of them falls away, it's really important that you have a plan B. The other question that I would like to ask you today, Phil, is what do we need to look out for when we are signing up for an insurance policy? So there's so much out there, so many people out there. What are your I guess top three tips for people to look for when deciding on a policy and what's right for them?
Insurance is only worth anything to you if it pays out when you need to claim. That's really a focus from the point of view of, as an advisor myself, is setting up the policy such that it is the most likely thing to be successful when you need to make a claim in the sort of circumstances that we've identified as your risks. From that point of view, one of the key pitfalls is non-disclosure in when you're applying for insurance. So really important that the insurer's questions have been answered honestly and the honestly and completely in the application. Whilst it sounds sort of really callous, insurers will, when they're paying a claim, the first thing they will do is look for, is there something that wasn't disclosed and therefore we're not bound to this contract? It's just the same as you might do with any contract you'd have with a, somebody you're providing services for. If they try and hold you to something that you actually haven't committed to do for them, you're going to say, hang on a second, that isn't what I signed up to do for you. Full disclosure. The advantage of having proper full disclosure is that you know from the point of policy issue what you are and aren't covered for. So if they say they're going to exclude something that's in your medical history or a particular hazardous activity, so maybe you're a deep sea scuba diver in your free time or something like that. If they exclude that activity, you at least know where you stand and you don't have an expectation that it's going to pay out in a circumstance that it wouldn't. Also discussing that in advance with your advisor, whoever that is that's helping you set it up, we can look at which providers are most likely to give you the best terms for that circumstance. So that's an important consideration and something that's really difficult to do if you just go out as an independent person and say, I'm going to ring up an insurer and ask them to insure me. Because when you do it that way, you're only getting the answer from that one company. You're not comparing or having somebody compare for you what can be offered by different providers. It's quite common for different providers to rate different activities and different occupations to different levels of risk. So that means that some providers might not offer cover for an earth mover operator, for example, whereas another provider might.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that whole piece of understanding the underwriting terms that are sitting in deep down in the depths of the insurer's wordings.
Right. So essentially, yeah. Knowing, because you're a broker, right? So it's essentially, yeah. One is experience, and understanding what each of these insurance policies and underwriters are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember you and I talked about this in the past, where you said, look, we understand the terminology of the different underwriters, and it's really important that you look out for somebody that understands that policy and can interpret it for you. So
absolutely. Yeah. So that's one of the things you definitely get with time in the industry, experience. You become familiar with not just what's in writing in the provider's policy wordings, but also how they choose to interpret it. So experiencing past claims, past applications for insurance with different providers, gives you a level of knowledge beyond what's in writing in the brochure, if that makes sense. So that's quite important. The other thing is actually setting things up such that the claims process is going to be as easy as it can be. So it's my preference, if it's possible, to use what we call an agreed value product for anything that's a monthly benefit. The advantage of that, particularly for self-employed people, is our incomes can go up and down. We can have, you know, good seasons and bad seasons, or perhaps come to the end of a contract and be light on work for a few months. If that happens to coincide with the time that you're then unwell, something that isn't agreed value is going to be based on your most recent turnover, your most recent revenue, whereas something that's agreed value is based on what you proved at the time of application. So the claims process becomes simpler because you're then not proving the loss at the time of claim. So it's all based on what was set up at the start.
That's a very interesting point again that you're making, because I had experience with a client where there wasn't an agreed value. And the claim was essentially not a lot.
Yes.
So to speak, you know. Simply because of not knowing any better.
Absolutely.
That's what these sessions are all about. And it actually brings me to the next question that I had, is how, you know, what's involved in the claim process? How easy or hard is it? And you touched on a few points there already, but if you could elaborate on that.
Yeah. So generally speaking, any claim that's based on sickness, the insurer is going to want to know medical history. So they're going to ask for notes from your current GP. What they're basically looking for, as mentioned earlier, is whether there's any non-disclosure. So whether you already had symptoms or a past event of that particular illness that you failed to disclose at the time of application. Again, disclosure, really important. If you've done all the disclosure right, then there's nothing to be worried about in terms of them asking for your doctor's notes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the first piece. They're going to want that medical information. The second piece, again, sort of ties back to the are you agreed value or not. So if it's a loss of revenue, loss of income type of product that isn't agreed value, then at that point where you're doing the claim, we're going to have to prove the loss. So we're going to need recent accounts or that sort of thing to substantiate the financial part of the claim. And obviously that can be quite difficult, particularly if you're, you know, seriously unwell and not actively in the business to pull the numbers out.
So that's a
piece there. It does vary again between products and providers. So some providers are much easier to claim with than others. And certain instances are easier to claim for with certain providers than others. So for example, if you've got sort of something that's a fairly basic and obvious injury, you know, you're out mountain biking, you broke your leg. They know when it happened, you know, you turned up at hospital, had an x-ray, your leg's broken. A couple of the providers will go, yep, your leg's broken, we'll just pay out what you're due because you've got a broken leg. Whereas other providers will go into more detail and, you know, still put the history and that sort of stuff. So that is, you know, another part of the claims experience. The flip side, the other side is if you're with a good advisor, a good broker business, they will support you through the claims process. So it does vary between different different businesses. But certainly from my own point of view, I'm very proactive in supporting people through the claims process, helping them with claim forms, helping them gather the information, chasing up the GPs for notes if the GP is being slow, all that sort of stuff to help smooth that claims process. Ultimately for me in the business, the good piece, the sort of the warm feeling comes from getting claims played for people. So I find that quite an important and rewarding part of the, of the role, to provide that claim support.
Great. Now, lastly, there are a few, you know, if you have pre-existing health issues or this is something that, and it, I guess it comes back down to the non-disclosure. You know, if there's anything pre-existing and then you go and sign up for insurance, what is the hardest industry, I guess, or what are the hardest people to insure in your perspective? I put you on the spot there.
Yeah. So generally people who work in a job don't see their job as being, you know, that high risk, because it's what you do every day and you're familiar with it and you're used to the safety practices you need to do. But from an insurer's point of view, they're looking at the risks that you're potentially exposed to compared with other people that are out there. So if you're an accountant and you're sitting in an office and you're at a desk, the thing, if you break your leg, you can still work. You can still sit at a desk and use a computer and all that sort of stuff. Whereas if you're a roofer, you can't be climbing on roofs with a broken leg. So there's that sort of difference comes into it. You then go to the extremes, if you like. So if you're an arborist who's using ropes to climb a tree, swinging a chainsaw around, all the insurers are going to see that as a very high risk. You make a mistake, you can, you know, fall out of the tree, cut your leg off with the chainsaw, whatever it might be. So obviously significant risks come with that. And we would need to be resourceful in terms of what type of products we used to try and cover as best we can what you need to do. So there'll be certain products that will be completely inaccessible for that arborist who's 30 meters up a tree with a chainsaw. But there's other products we would still be able to do to cover some of the risks that exist. Yeah, so
some people listening to this would probably say, well, ACC will just cover me. And I just want to also stress again, disclaimer, we need to talk about disclaimers before we finish.
Yes.
But, you know, ACC covers you in a case of an accident. Again, there are different products out there because you're not always getting a lot when something happens if you're not set up right. But you know, I guess what we're talking about today is also the covers that happening not necessarily through an accident, you know.
Yes, so there are two parts to that. So firstly, ACC, you're quite right, covers accident and victim of crime stuff. So if you're a shopkeeper and somebody comes in and, you know, points a gun at you and you've decided you can't work in the shop anymore because you're traumatized and all that sort of stuff, that might well be something that ACC would support.
Yeah.
So absolutely, ACC is really good and from that point of view. But its limitations are very much around that it needs to be an accident or a victim of crime circumstance. So as soon as you get into anything that's degenerative or health related, ACC aren't coming to the party for that. The obvious serious things are things like heart attacks, cancer, all those sorts of really serious things that can take us out of work for several months, if not permanently. Are not things that ACC are going to support you with. And there's a whole load of less serious things that can still take you out of work for several months that are not going to be in ACC's remit. ACC are also quite good at saying that an injury that happened 20 years ago that's flared up is now a degenerative arthritis issue. I see it quite a lot with shoulders and that sort of thing where people need shoulder surgery and so on, and ACC are saying, nah, it's degenerative, it's not related to your injury 15 years ago. So those sorts of things come into it. But the other thing is, when ACC do cover you, is it going to give you the cover you need? Again, there are two different ACC products that you can be on as a self-employed person, and this is self-employed if you're doing drawings, not if you're doing PAYE. So if you're self-employed and doing drawings, you can choose with ACC your income level to be assured for. So if you're sort of free piece of advice there, if your occupation, your business has a very volatile level of income, it really is worth fixing your ACC benefit by going on to the Cover Plus option so that you know what you'll get if you need to claim from ACC. But apart from that, yes, ACC's standard product for self-employed people, it's going to be based on your most recent level of income. So if you've had a bad year the year before, particularly relevant at the moment where people have downtraded through COVID and lockdowns and that sort of thing, and their business is only just starting to pick up again, if you have a break your back tomorrow and you're off for 6 months, ACC are going to base what they pay you on last year's, not on what you might have earned this year. So there's that piece to take into account.
Awesome. Hey, I could talk about this all day and ask you so many more questions that sort of pop up for me, but I think we wrap it up here. Let's talk disclaimers really quickly. This is general advice, and nobody should be taking any specific advice out of these sessions. You will have a disclaimer showing after our recording. So please read through this. If you have any questions, one thing I want to just let everyone know, maybe you can do that, Phil. You have a promotion going at the moment.
We certainly do, yes. So we have a promotion running to the end of May. So it's basically everyone who signs up for a free initial review with the Haven Advisor, such as myself, is entered into a draw for a $4,000 travel voucher. So there's sort of a bit of a call to action. It's important. There is no commitment to it. It's a free session. You can use it just as an opportunity to learn more on a personalized level about what your risks are and what the potentials are for covering those risks. No commitment to sign up to anything, no cost to it. Get yourself.
Well, make sure you select Phil Pingram as the advisor when you sign up. The link for this particular promotion will be in the comments below. So please click it. Just even, you know, just have Phil review your personal situation again. Like he said, there's no obligation, but if anything, it's just become more aware of where you may be able to transfer some of your risk to an insurance policy that really aids you and complements what you're already doing. With that being said, do you want to add anything else?
It's probably worth saying to that, it doesn't, if you've already got insurance set up but you're not quite sure if it covers everything you need it to or if it's still relevant, maybe it needs updating, then absolutely we can withdraw, we can review that for you as well. So it's for the uninsured as well as those that might need to update their current arrangements.
Fantastic. Hey, thank you so much for making time to talk to us and our audience. Hopefully you will receive a lot of emails and phone calls out of this, but it's really refreshing to always work with other advisors because we don't know everything. And it's really important for us to collaborate with like-minded people that really want to do the right thing for their clients. So thank you again for taking the time out, talking to us today and sharing some of your expertise with us.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
No problem.
Right. Thank you, Miriam.